All right, so with that, let's return to open session and take up item 11, which is the consideration and taking possible action to adopt the December 31, 2021 valuation report. So we have, hopefully we will move over Paul Angelo and Andy Young. I see Paul, I saw him there. There he is. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Looks like he's joined us. Great to see you as always.
And do we have the staff want to do an introduction here? Andy's here with me. Andy.
Andy's there.
Absent any introductory comments by staff, we can just jump in. Gail, is that okay?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. I also want to mention for the record, I was going to be presenting this from Long Beach, where I was going to be attending the NASR conference. I think that Chair Gordon and Mr. McDonald, I know you signed up for it. I don't know if you were able to attend it or not.
We were there. Yep.
As a matter of prudence, on the Friday before I was supposed to fly down there, I did a rapid test and I came up positive, my very first one. So I've been sitting home. I didn't want to infect Mr. McDonald or Mr. Gordon down there. So I'm at home, and I'm doing okay. I'm really doing quite well, very mild symptoms. But if I start flagging off here, Andy will have to pick up the slot.
We were very upset, but we understand.
Thank you, sir.
We understand. Hope you feel better and get fully well soon.
Thank you. And we did have our colleague, Todd Towser. I was going to do a panel, actually, actual panel. Right. Mr. Towser was able to step in. So that was good, too. Anyway, so as agendized, we are here to discuss the December 31, 2021 actual evaluation. I think most of the trustees here have been through this before with maybe one or two exceptions. I'm going to pop this thing up here to make sure that we can all get it. There's that. And then we will share screen. And this one. So I hope you can see there the title page of the actual report, December 31, 2021. Mr. Chairman, is that showing?
Yes.
Good. Okay. So as we often do, we are going to, this thing opens with some boilerplate description of why one does an actual evaluation. But we will really focus our attention here, starting on page 7, where we have valuation highlights. And for each of those highlights, we have a reference over in the left margin where the trustees can go and get more information on it. And we will jump to a couple of those as we go through our presentation. We had two main events. First is that we did do a review of economic and demographic assumptions. Those assumptions were adopted by the board earlier this year. Those included significantly a reduction in the inflation assumption from 275 down to 250, and attendant to that, reduction of the discount rate from 7% down to 6.75, other minor adjustments to the demographic assumptions. The other thing that happened is that we had the annexation of East Contra Costa Fire Protection District into Contra Costa Fire Protection District. We did a detailed letter on that, which is referenced here, May 10, 2022. This involves four of what are called your cost groups. You had separate cost groups for the safety members with Confire in cost group 8 and East Fire in cost group 13, which was actually a new cost group because they had just recently divested, separated from Confire. The general members for Confire were all in their own cost group 5, whereas the general members for East Fire were mixed in with pooled with other members in cost group 1. So there was a little bit of moving of assets around to follow the liabilities and to follow the members as they were reassigned in different cost groups. All of that is reflected in this valuation. And in fact, the results from the contribution rates from the previous valuation were adjusted to reflect that. And that's what is laid out also in our May 10. So those are the two main events that you wouldn't see as sort of the typical changes. After that, now we go to the more standard bullets. Bullet number 3 here talks about the that because you did have a good investment return year, your funded ratio on a smooth basis increased slightly from about 92 just under 92 to just over 92. And the ratio on a market value basis increased more dramatically from 96 to about 101. Note that even though that doesn't mean that every cost group is overfunded, and also that's on a market basis. And so we like to wait to let those things sort of percolate for a few years. And as you can imagine with the returns we're seeing this year so far, that it may turn out that was a temporary condition. But all the results do reflect that. It was a question?
Yes. Just I wanted you to comment on how many other plans that you're serving are over that 100% number.
We had a couple. Andy, maybe you can help me out on that, but I know that we had in at least I think that we had somewhere there were cost groups that were over. But Andy, I'm trying to, and remember the other thing is, Mr. Phillips, you are a calendar year plan. And we serve three calendar year plans here in California. For the fiscal year plans, their measurement date was June 30th of 2022, when markets weren't up quite as high. And of course, they are going to be in for something of a shock when we do their June 30, 2022. But Andy, I'm trying to remember if we have any plans that in total were over 100% funded. And I will say, though, except of course, the City of Fresno retirement plans that have been over 100% funding for the 15 years we've been serving. So they have been there for like forever. But Andy, wow. Other than, I know we had some cost groups in Orange County that are over 100%. Do we have any other full systems that you recall that were over 100%, even on a market value base?
Yes. I think to the point, Paul, you made earlier on, we have a minority of our clients that perform the valuation on the calendar year, December 31st basis. So based on the December 31st market value basis, we do have another client over Sonoma County, SCARA, which has over 100% funding status. Of course, we were quick to remind them that that could also be a temporary phenomenon.
Thank you.
Does that address your question?
I think this is one of those moments that's worthy of at least 30 seconds of, this is pretty unique. Certainly in my service on our board and paying attention to the descriptive information on other plans throughout the state and the country, you don't see this very often.
Well, although I'll say, Mr. Phillips, you and I have been in the actuarial industry for a long time. If you go back to the late 90s, and Andy's been doing these plans since the middle 80s, in the late 90s, we had, I would say, quite a few plans.
That were I just can't remember that far back, but you're right.
Well, I will tell you, you would do well to remember that far back. Because, and in fact, if any of you were at the CalUPERS conference this spring, again, that was when we still thought we were going to be sitting on surplus. We did a session on what do you do when the plan gets to overfunding, not just on a market value basis, but even if it became on a more sustained smooth value basis. And we trotted out, C plus I equals B plus E, right? And what happened in the late 90s is that when you amortize that surplus, instead of getting an amortization charge, you got an amortization credit. So instead of contributing normal cost plus an amount to amortize your unfunded, which is what you see in this report, plans were contributing normal cost minus an amortization credit. They were contributing less than the normal cost. And that turned out to be an unstable situation. It led to benefit increases. So C plus I equals B plus E. We had a real big I that led to reductions in C and led to reductions in B. And then when the market reversed, some of those benefit changes were because of vested rights are with us for a generation. We think now if we got to a sustained surplus condition, maybe we should look at I. We should look instead of using that opportunity, instead of spending the surplus on either contribution reductions or benefit increase, we could spend it on risk reduction and actually dial back perhaps some of the riskiness of the asset portfolio, which would lower the discount rate, which would increase the liability, which would make the surplus go. So we don't know that we're going to be having that conversation anytime soon, because it looks as though the market downturn, certainly for the fiscal year plans, are going to comfortably move us away from surplus again. But that is certainly a conversation to have, Mr. Phillips. It is distinctive, certainly in the last 10 years, certainly since the Great Recession. I do think it's kind of exciting to point out that a combination of robust funding policies and favorable market returns have actually now made up for the losses that we saw during the 2000, in your case, the 2008 year, where you had a significant negative return.
Right.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. With that, I'm going to go to page 8, and we'll now get to the first of the items that I would like to jump to the body of the report. You'll see at the top here on highlight 4, the unfunded liability, which we measure in dollars, decreased from about $860 million to about $855 million again. Now, this was the net effect of a number of events. And so you'll see here, page 31, I'm going to jump to that page. So if you're following along at home, if you go to page 31, This is where we see the reconciliation of the unfunded liability from last year to this year. There are a number of remarkable things to note here. The unfunded liability last year was about $860 million. That's in line one. The normal operation of the plan, if there were no gains and losses and no assumption changes, is as follows. You accrue another year of normal costs, which is about $250 million. You also accrue administrative expenses. We collect employer and employee contributions, employer and member contributions, $468 million. And then everything accrues in interest because these are all present value. Well, the $468 million is enough to pay the normal cost, pay interest on the unfunded liability and the normal cost, and still have enough left over, look at this, to drop the unfunded from $860 million to $718 million. This is what I talk about, your robust amortization policies. You are so deeply into the layers of your layered amortization. It's like a home mortgage where those later payments become more and more principal instead of just interest. So if there were no gains and losses and no assumption changes, your unfunded liability would have dropped by about $140 million simply because of the normal operation of your funding policy. And I would say, Mr. Phillips, just to pick on you a little bit, I find this as remarkable as the fact that you happen to be 100% funded. It's really this steady progression of your amortization policy that I think is really is one of the board's striking actuarial achievements. Well, of course, the assumptions don't all come true. So in this case, even though you had a market return of about 14%, which we'll talk about in a second, even though your market return was about 14%, let me look here real quick. Your return after smoothing was about 8.25%, but that's still higher than the 7% that was assumed last year. Remember, you lower the discount rate, the expected return from 7 to 6.75, but only effective for December 31, 21 going forward. Right. During 21, we were still in a 7% world. So we compare that 7% assumption to 8.25%, which is what you earn on a smooth basis. And that difference, that gain of about 1.25%, totals up about $120 million. So that is that comes out of your unfunded. You had contributions somewhat lower than expected. That's just a timing issue. You did get additional unfunded liability contributions. You have a number of your employers that are basically sort of funding their unfunded liability even faster than is required under your funding policy. You did have salary increases higher than expected. That is good for the members, but it actually is a loss to the plan. You also had COLA increases. As you know, we had very high inflation. You had COLA increases greater than expected. Remember, we were assuming a 2.75 COLAs during the 2021 year. And the actual COLAs that were made were larger than that because you had inflation that was large enough that for your members that are in the old 3% and 4% COLA tiers, they got those larger amounts. And that's all described in a COLA letter that we also sent out earlier this year. So you really had losses on salaries, losses on COLAs. There's always an other item of here, a fairly small $7 million. And then the elephant in the room is those assumption changes, primarily the change in the economic assumptions, increased your unfunded liability, increased your accrued liability, and therefore your unfunded liability by about $235 million. So net-net, we did have an increase of $137 million above what would have been expected. And that, again, as you can see, is the assumption changes about half offset by favorable experience primarily from investments, but with some losses on the demographic side, salaries and COLAs. So again, we love this page because it has everything that happened to your plan really quantified here in terms of its effect on the unfunded. So now we end up with 854. Again, not much less than the 859 that we started with at the beginning of the year, but there's a lot going on under the surface there, right? Very serious positive amortization offset by your assumption changes, which themselves are offset by favorable investment experience, which itself was offset by unfavorable demographic experience. A lot of moving parts to get what looks like not much change in your total unfunded liability. And anything you want to throw in there on that?
Paul, I know that we talk about this in section one of the report, But even though no employer, no trustees would like to add any UAL to the plan, but when we did the experience study, we did identify what's the potential UAL impact in the experience study and the contribution rate impact in the experience study for each and every cost group. So the numbers actually came pretty close to what we forewarned the employers about back in April.
Very good. Okay. So with that, I'm going to go back to page 7. I guess now we're on page 8. Page 25 has just sort of a summary of some of the gain loss items, but I really want to go next to bullet 6 or highlight 6. Now, we talked about the what happened from last year to this year on the unfunded liability. Now let's do the same thing on the average employer contribution rate. And so what you'll see is a lot of the same items that we saw for the unfunded, but a couple of new items. So for that, I'm going to, as it says there, jump to page 33. So if you're following along, we're on page 33 now. Now, it's the same idea. The top here is the average recommended employer contribution rate from last year, about 33.87. I always like to say there is no one in the plan for whom the contribution is actually 33.87. You have a wide variety of contribution rates for the employers across your 12 cost groups. But we looked at this average just to give a general sense. So now we're going to see some of the same things. We had investments return greater than expected. That was that 115 million. Take that 115 million, amortize it over 18 years, which is your amortization policy, divided by payroll, and you get just under 1% of pay, 90 basis points. The effect of actual contributions less than expected. These are relatively small numbers. We had additional contributions, but in terms of the whole plan, they actually round to zero. They're in there, and they affect the LAFCO and San Ramon employers. Just as before, we saw individual salaries greater than expected. Increase really expected, that translates to about 19 basis points. I'm going to jump down to number 6, which is the COLAs. We had COLAs greater than expected. We saw the impact on the unfunded. Here, that alone increases average employee rate by about 50 basis points. Now, item 5, we did not see before, because when salaries grow higher than expected, that creates a loss because it's larger liabilities. Somewhat paradoxically, overall, we had a smaller than expected projected payroll, because what that means is even though individual salaries increased higher than expected, the overall payroll growth, and this would be because of larger, higher paid members being replaced by lower paid members, but perhaps some demographic shrinkage there. So we actually had, again, moving in opposite directions, larger liabilities because of individual payroll growth higher than assumed, but an increase in the unfunded liability rate because the dollar amount of the unfunded payments are being spread over a lower than expected payroll. We assume that during that, in that last valuation, we assumed that salaries would grow at 3.25% per year. And it turns out that your total payroll grew less than 3.25%. Andy, anything you can comment on that? Was that a matter of headcount going down? That would be a typical reason for that?
I think it's both. The total payroll base went down by 2.6%. Part of the reason, as Paul was alluding to, there was almost a 1% reduction in the active member headcount.
Very good. So again, normally those two things would go in opposite directions, because higher payroll means higher liabilities, but higher payroll also means a larger base to spread it over. So it'd be a reduction. So it's a little bit unusual to see these both in the cost increase direction. And then, as I say, now this is the item 7 is a change in active member demographics on normal costs. That's basically the replacement of the higher cost legacy tier folks with lower cost PEPRA tier folks. So that's a gradual process. We'd like to show how much that affects each year. A somewhat material impact here. And we have another item. And then finally, here is the assumption changes, where we actually had, if you take both the effect on normal cost and take that effect on the unfunded liability, that $240 million amortized over 18 years divided by payroll. So net, we did have an increase in the average recommended employer contribution from 33.9 up to about 35.6. And as you can see, that's primarily the result of the new assumption changes. And again, this is something that we did communicate to the employers We estimated this based upon the prior valuation when the board adopted the new assumptions. And this estimate, this actual number came in quite close to the estimate. Finally, there's a small number here we had for cost group three. There was a contribution rate equal to normal cost. This is, I believe, Andy, this is the cost group that is in surplus.
That's right, sanitation,
yes. The sanitation district. And so, you know, when we do this up to this point, we are assuming that, well, if the unfunded liability for sanitation goes from being unfunded to being a surplus, we build that into all these numbers. But then because, in fact, we still have that employer pay the normal cost, that alone had an impact on this overall rate of about 9 basis. So again, mostly the same things that we saw before. The demographic experience had a couple items. Investment experience had a gain, but really the driver in terms of cost change is the changes. So those are the two pages that we like to go through in a lot of detail. The only other page I'll look at with the board briefly involves investment experience. Let me go back to my page 8. So if we're continuing down here, by the way, there is a reconciliation of the member rates. I'm sorry, I should look at that. I did not leave that out. We have a similar reconciliation of the average member rate. That also increased from 1185 and 1217, primarily because of the change in assumptions. This is a good place to note that both for the employer rates and for the member rates, even though we show this in aggregate, the actual impact on the unfunded, on the employer rates, on the member rates, contribution rate group by contribution rate group will be quite different. We tend to see larger increases for the cost groups that cover safety members and relatively smaller increases for the cost groups that cover general members. And there is a document that we will be releasing after the actual report, which actually it's a letter that we send that has this kind of reconciliation, the one that we saw on this previous page. It has this kind of reconciliation for each cost group, and that helps the employers see on their particular little sub plan how these this experience affected them. That comes out one of the letters that we do after the full report's done. So the next place I'd like to jump to is, I'll go back up to 8 just so we can see where it is. I just want to look at the investment experience briefly here. We mentioned, I'm going now to page 9. And as I mentioned earlier, the rate of return on market value was about 14%, 13.99, whereas the return after smoothing was about 8.25%. Now, even though this thing says to jump to page 26, I'm actually going to go to page 27. I'll go to 26 and we can move on from there. What is all that stuff there? Okay. I'm going to go to 26. 26 shows the rates of return just for the current year, but I'd like to put them a little more of a historical context. So I'm going to go to page 27. And here we see a 10-year history. And it's been a kind of a good 10 years. On a market value basis, your 10-year average return is 9.16 and your 5-year was 9.6. On a smooth basis, those are all still above 7. We do not put a whole lot of stock in these 5 and 10-year averages because they're quite volatile, depending on which 5 or 10 years you happen to be looking at. We tend to look more at the overall pattern. And what you can see here is that the market value roller coaster, we'll see a picture of this in a second, is because of your 5-year smoothing, we deliver a much more stable set of returns in determining the unfunded liabilities. Let's go one more page. This is really a great place to see this. You know, we only show 10 years on that table, but I've insisted that the staff continue to, this is more than 10 years. And that's because I want the trustees to be able to see before the Great Recession in 2007-8, when both the smooth return and the market return were comfortably above your assumed return. Here is the market downturn in 2008. You had close to a minus 30% return, you and every other plan in the state. And what you can see here, the rates of return after 5-year smoothing moved down, but not as quickly. That gives the market a chance to recover. 2009, 2010. You had returns substantially greater than you assumed. And here's the smooth return pulling back up. So this is a great picture. Now, these are not dollars. These are rates. This is a great picture of how the green squares are the market value roller coaster. And with the 5-year smoothing, the red triangle there are the rates of return, including the 5-year smoothing, clearly following the contour of the market returns, but with much less year-to-year volatility. So a great picture here of why we use five-year smoothing. We have a similar graph that shows the dollar amounts, and that's actually back, I think, on page 25. I'm just going to go back to that. I'm now looking, I'm sorry, page 24. The scale is a little bit harder to read here on page 24. This is now the market value in the green square and the smooth value in the red triangle. The dollar amounts, and it's the same idea. When 2008 had the big downturn, smoothing was basically, the smooth value was greater than the market value because we were deferring losses. And then a few years later, we get 2013-14, after a couple of good years, the market value is higher because we're deferring gains. Well, after the last 2 years, two very strong years, you can see here the smooth value is lower than the market value. We are again deferring gains. And if we have a bad year in 2022, we'll put those gains to work. So again, we call this the market smooth value, market value dance. Good years, market value is higher. Bad years, market value is lower. But clearly, the smooth value following the trend of the market value over this extended period of time. Andy, is there anything else? I'll go back to the highlights here on nine. Any other key highlights here? We mentioned that there were additional payments here under highlight 12 from the sanitary district and some other employers.
Then on page here, Paul, if we go back to the prior page, as you have alluded to, right now the market value is higher than the valuation value of assets, the smooth value by about $1 billion. So which is about 10% of the size of the asset. So I'm guesstimating that the trustee is now a little bit uneasy trying to look at the rate of return for the current year and see what we can do to mitigate any bumps in the market. So maybe we can talk a little bit about how we can take the $1 billion into good use.
Yeah, and the way we look at that, if we go, now we're going to get in the weeds now a little bit here, but if we go to page, I think it's 23, this is the actual calculation of your smooth value of assets. And unfortunately, because you do interest crediting over every 6 months, instead of having just 5 1-year periods, you have 10 6-month periods. What this shows is for each 6-month period, what we expected to return, what we actually return, the difference is the gain or loss. And then these are deferred 90, 80, 70. So in the most recent 6 months, you had a substantial gain. This would be the last 6 months of 2021, but we're only recognizing 10% of that gain now. In the first half of 2021, you had a loss. And because that's 2 6-month periods ago, we are deferring 80% of that and recognizing 20%. So when you add all these up, and again, the further back you go, the more it's recognized. You add all those up, we are actually deferring $1 billion of gains, which means even though the market value was $11.5 billion, we are calculating the employer's unfunded liability as though we only had $10.5 billion. And as Andy mentioned, that's about a little under 9%. Now, what you might want to, one of the most useful things here is, okay, fine. Suppose starting December 31, 2021, the fund earns exactly the assumed rate of 6.75%. Well, this little spreadsheet is very predictable. So we can actually tell you over each of the next 5 years, the next four valuations or 4.5 valuations, how much of that $1 billion will be recognized. And you can see this little table down here. And roughly speaking, let's get my little bar out of the way there. Roughly speaking, it's about $200 million a year. So that means is, and again, it's not exactly level. What that means is if we had a loss on market value in 2022, when we got to the December 31, 2022 valuation, first of all, we would have two lines on here. We compare the expected and the assumed return. We would only recognize 10% of the most recent 6 months and 20% of the 6 months before that. But however much of that loss we recognize would be offset by $180 million of gain that would be recognized in the next valuation. This is fully predictable. Now, obviously, I say that's if the market value earns 6.75. We don't know about that, but we can tell you exactly when that $1 billion of deferred gains that was taken off the table in this valuation, when that will hit. You can see it's 180, 260, 200, 230, and 130. So whatever losses we may have in the future, they will also be spread out over the five-year period, but we will have these deferred gains standing ready to help offset them. So Andy, thanks for pointing that out. This is really where we had a couple folks, you know, thinking, well, what are we going to do? The market downturn, folks, your funding policies are fully equipped to digest this. And like I say, we're coming off a very strong year with $1 billion of deferred gains waiting to offset in the future law. Andy, I think, is that the point you're trying to get?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. With that, Mr. Chairman, this concludes our prepared remarks. I will say only one other thing, and this is not entirely seriously. We have a little contest every year among our 37 Act clients of who has the longest actuarial reports. And it used to be a kind of a contest between you guys and Orange County because they also have like 12 different cost groups. Well, you left them in the dust. Their actual report, they're also a calendar year plan. Their actual report was 158 pages, and yours is 178 pages. So you are the clear winner at this point, the longest actual report that we know of here in the state of California.
The undisputed champions.
There you go. But like the assets moving, you know, these things come and go.
Yeah. Well said. All right. So let's bring it back. Do you mind that? Yeah, let's not share the screen unless somebody has a specific question, because I can't see everybody when we share. So I have enough trouble managing things. So let's bring it back. Are there, first of all, thank you, Paul and Andy. Are there questions, comments on what we've seen? Everybody's dazzled. You see, you dazzle them, Paul. I think it, yeah. I mean, we've been through a few of these. I know that we do have at least one member who may be doing this for the first time, but have well understood the role of amortization and how the fund is managed. Jerry, had your hand up?
Yeah, I think it's safe to assume. I doubt we've taken a flash look at this, but I've always tried to look at the smoothing as a shock absorber, for lack of a better analogy. And we're going to have a chance to test that on the 6-month period, January 1 to June 30, correct? Since there's, fortunately, we've got something in the bank because we're going to see how the shock absorber works.
Right. And you will see that. Now, the thing is, even though we update the reserves on a 6-month basis, the only number that will affect your employer contribution rates is the 12-month number. So even though we'll have internally a look at the June 30, 2022, the number that's really going to matter is December 31, 2022. So we know that we had a rough 6 months. We'll see what happens for the 6 months that we are navigating.
Got it. Any other comments or questions for Andy? John?
Yes, I wanted to ask Paul and Andy as well, what you're looking at today for salary increases based upon the inflationary environment that we are clearly experiencing now?
Our assumption for long-term average wage increases is really not based upon short-term conditions. And so I'm just looking at that page here. It is currently a 3%. We're assuming that average wages will grow at 3%. We also have, though, on top of that, as part of our ongoing assumptions, merit and promotion, that is, as people advance in their careers. And those are heavily weighted toward the earlier years of the member's career. However, as far as any short-term impact that the current inflation may have on wages, that is something that would show up on the gains and losses. As you saw, when we did this valuation, there was an actuarial loss because individual salaries increased greater than assumed. We could very well see a comparable actuarial loss after the 2022 year, if we see actual increases increasing greater than assumed because of inflation. But we have no explicit, in our model, we have no explicit recognition of whatever short-term impact inflation might have.
Okay.
All righty. Any other comments or questions for Paul or Andy on the valuation report? Not seeing any. So what we'd be looking for is a motion to adopt the December 31, 2021 valuation report and contribution rates for the period July 1, 2023 through June
30, 2024. So moved.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded to consider and take action to adopt the valuation report and the contribution rates for July 1, 23 to June 30, 2024. Any further discussion on the item or the motion? Seeing none, and I see Dennis is back. I didn't realize that. I just noticed that he has shown up on my radar there. So with that, we're going to take our roll call vote on the motion. Anderson.
Aye.
Chabadarev. You're on mute, Dennis, I think, or you were. Yep. Now you're off. Chabadarev.
Aye.
Finley.
Aye.
Okay, where did I lose? There's Donnie. Donnie, are you you're on mute. What's your vote? There he is.
I just had to step away for a minute, so I didn't hear any of that.
Yeah, so this is the vote on the motion to adopt the valuation report and contribution rates for 2023-24.
Then it would be a yes.
Excellent. Gordon, aye. Holcomb?
Aye.
Kroll? Is Louis?
Aye.
Oh, there he is. McDonald?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
And Watts?
Aye.
All right, that motion carries 9-0. So the rates are adopted. So Paul and Andy, have they already left us? It looks like they have. Anyway, thanks to Paul and Andy for an always interesting report and explanation